Now it's time for Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party.
Good afternoon, Tracy. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks, Shamina. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So firstly today, I'd like to talk to you about how New Zealand First is calling for a binding referendum on the anti-smacking law. So why do this 10 years after the bill was made into law?
Well, I think the point is it is 10 years after. So, I mean, people have been either celebrating or commenting on the fact that the law has now been there for 10 years. 94 children have been killed in the last 10 years, 64 of them by their parents. And then that is more than, that's around about 8 to 10 children more than were killed in the decade before that there was the anti-smacking bill. So,
Oh, I think we've lost Tracy.
You have to decide who gave what reason for the implementation of it.
Sorry, we just lost you a little bit there.
Sorry.
But what I'm wondering though, is there enough evidence of public support for changes to be made on this issue?
There was a poll done recently where 67% of the respondents, I think it was either 835 or 935 respondents, 67% said that they were unhappy or they felt that the current law was not clear around a parent's ability to discipline their child.
But just doesn't this evidence of public support, though, show that the problem instead is almost just a common misunderstanding of the bill?
Mm.
I mean, so the poll that you just referred to, that was commissioned by Family First, who were a strong opponent to the anti-smacking law, they found that 65% of respondents would smack their child to correct their behaviour regardless of the law. But the thing is, a light smack is actually okay. I mean, we've got former Green MP Bradford.
You're wrong.
Sue Bradford herself, who was, you know, the architect of this bill, she said herself, light smacks are not going to get parents in trouble. And I mean, a police review concluded there have been just 8 smacking prosecutions in the first 5 years since the bill was introduced. So, I mean, the consequences of the bill have not been at all that good parents are getting prosecuted for smacking their children. Is that not correct?
Okay, two things. First of all, have you read the new powers of discipline in the Crimes Act 1981 that Sue put in place?
Yes, I have.
You read them?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so you will know that subsection 1 has a very clear definition around the fact that a parent of a child is justified in using force if the force used is A, B, C, D, right?
Mm.
And then if you go to subsection 2, it says nothing in subsection 1 or in any rule of common law justifies the use of force for the purpose of correction. And then it says subsection 3 says subsection 2 prevails over subsection 1. In other words, what Sue has done with subsection 2 and 3 is completely wipe out any legal contextual for subsection 1.
Mm.
Now, that's what the problem is. That's what the problem is, okay? And with regard to there's only been 8 prosecutions, you're absolutely right, there's only been 8 prosecutions. However, every single reporting of a light smack is now, it must be reported by teachers and doctors and so on and so forth to what was CIF. And this is from the CIF's website, and this is a quote. If a person reports smacking to Child, Youth and Family, social workers will consider it as an allegation of assault, and all allegations of assault must be investigated. So while it might not lead to a prosecution, there will be a CIFS worker show up at the door. There will be a file opened on the family and the parent, and that file will stay open.
Mm.
It'll be there.
But are we seeing a change? But what are you saying the consequence of this is, though? Because, you know, the data that I mentioned before kind of indicated that people still aren't really necessarily changing their behaviour. They're kind of still going to operate as they see fit. And I just don't know if there's like the evidence to suggest that this is really affecting the way that parents deal with their children.
Sure. So I'll give you some examples of. So, and mostly this is actually around teenagers. This is around 12, 13-year-olds and so on. Because a child under this regulation is considered between the age of 0 to 14. So here's an example of a person who contacted my offices his daughter said, "I'm going out. I'm going out Saturday night, I'm going doing this." And he and his wife said, "No, you're not." And the conversation escalated and she said, "You can't touch me. If you touch me, I'll call the police. I'm leaving." Now, those parents restrained, because this is about restraining as well, not just light smacking, let's get clear. Those parents restrained their daughter so that she did not leave the house that night. Now, they spent the next week wondering if she had gone to school and reported them to the police. Is that what we believe? Is that what this law was supposed to do, do you think?
But there is, you know, but with the change in the law, there are sort of things that sort of cater for an instance such as that. I mean, we've got, it says every parent of a child and every person in the place of a parent of the child is justified in using force if the force used is reasonable in the circumstances and is for the purpose of performing the normal daily tasks that are incidental to good care and parenting.
That's right, but they're wiped out by subsection 2 and subsection 3. Have a look at them. It says there is no rule or subsection 1 or any rule of common law justifies the use of force for the purpose of correction. It completely wipes out subsection 1, and that's what the problem is.
But then how do you distinguish between the purpose of correction and good care and parenting?
Exactly.
Is that not up to
how
the courts to decide to be able to, okay, well, in this instance, they were correct to be able to do this?
But that was exactly what the courts did under the old Article 59. So the police always had discretion under the old Article 59 to pursue a case or not. The courts always had discretion under the old Article 59 to decide if it was reasonable or not.
But
we
had some problems
with the courts definitely saying that some stuff was reasonable when it certainly was not reasonable.
Yeah, but I mean, under the old Article Section 59 of the Crimes Act, before it was amended, there was a case of parents who had disciplined their children using a riding crop, and another case of parents using a rubber hose because of the legal justification for reasonable force. So you're saying that the changes should let those things be justifiable again?
No, of course not. And they were never justifiable. What we had there was we had a problem with judges. So I'll give you another case. So there was a gentleman that was taken to court because he chased his child around the yard and gave them a hiding with an Alka-Seltzer pipe. The judge decided that was reasonable in his mind because he had been beaten with a piece of 4x2 as a child. The judge in that instance decided that what was reasonable in the mind of the perpetrator was what the law meant. I would suggest to you that it's actually what is reasonable in the eyes of society is what the law meant. And I wouldn't be advocating for a repeal back to what we had before. I would be advocating for an amendment, remove subsection 2, remove subsection 3. And then I think what Sue put in place with regard to that wording in subsection 1 is a great clarity.
Mm. So a referendum on this issue has actually taken place before. There was a citizens-initiated non-binding referendum in 2009 about the issue. And now a survey before it took place and found that 3 out of 4 New Zealanders believed the $8.9 million referendum was a waste of money. So do you believe that people have changed their view and are in support of a referendum 8 years later?
Well, what we think is that this law is not good law and that it needs to be readdressed. What we believe in is binding referendum. What we also believe is that there are probably 3 or 4 topics that you could put together and have a 12 to 18 month discussion that the country can actually, and I personally think they need to see the actual piece of legislation in front of them before they go to the polls, and then the people can vote on those issues. Democracy is one of the most expensive ways to actually run your country, but it's also one of the best ways.
And so just finally, I wanted to quickly touch on the revelations that have come out regarding National MP Todd Barclay and how he secretly recorded a long-standing member of staff during a difficult employment dispute. So what's New Zealand First's take on this? Should he resign? Should he be sacked? What's your take?
I'm not going to make any statement about what we think Todd should do. This is something for the National Party, something for the government, something for Bill English to sort out. I don't think anybody believes that the behaviour that's been described is appropriate. So it'll be interesting to see what actions they take. But that's a National Party issue, not a New Zealand First issue.
But you don't see it as enough of a problem to call for the national government. And we've got John Key who knew about it, and we've got Bill English who knew about it. Is this not a bad reflection on their leadership? Is this not such a, embarrassing issue for the National Party that you're going to call on them to take action?
Well, I'm not the leader of New Zealand First, and we haven't discussed this inside our caucus because a lot of this happened yesterday after our caucus meeting. So I'm not going to call on anything, but I would suggest that it hasn't been the best couple of days. for the National Party or this current government to be seen in a great light. I mean, but add this to a whole lot of other things. Alfred Nauru, Nikki Wagner. I mean, we're seeing a pattern here, aren't we?
Mm. Great. Well, thank you very much for speaking with me again this week, Tracy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Shamina. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party. The Wire.